The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Today, we'll talk about doing Disney World with little ones. That's coming up on this episode 29 of WDW Prep to Go. Hello and welcome to WDW Prep to Go, where we talk strategy and ideas for people planning their Disney World trips. I am your host, Shannon Albert, the creator of WDWPrepSchool.com, as well as this podcast. Welcome to today's episode. You can find me on the website, in addition to the podcast, about 1 to 2 times a week, and on social media. Facebook.com/WDWPrepSchool happens to be my favorite place to hang out and to post things all the time, asking questions and sharing links and all that kind of fun stuff. So really like it there and invite you to join us there as well. Speaking of the website, I am in the middle of posting a series of blog posts about special events that take place at Disney World. I realized recently that I hadn't discussed them in much detail. And so I'm just trying to sort of tackle all the main ones. And so this week I published a post about the Flower and Garden Festival. And the Flower and Garden Festival started just this last week in beginning of March, and it will go until the middle of May. And so I have a whole post about what's included there and if I think it's worth it and how to maybe tour and include some of the things that are involved with the Flower and Garden Festival. I have a series of posts that are coming up about special events. Like next week, I will be publishing one about Run Disney events. And I did an interview with someone who knows a lot about that because it's not a topic that I am comfortable handling on my own. I have never been and don't know anything about it. So I asked somebody some questions and I'll be publishing all of that information this week. I also have several like half written posts because I'm waiting on Disney to release some information. So as soon as they tell us more about Star Wars weekends, or the Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween Party, etc., I'll have those posts published as soon as we have the 2014 current information, and those will be going live on the site. Now, when this podcast goes live, it'll be March 9th. I'm recording this a little bit in advance, a couple days, because I am packing for my trip. My trip begins March 10th, tomorrow. And so I will be at Disney World during our spring break with my son, and I'm staying at Coronado Springs, and I'm doing several sort of experiments, and so I'm looking forward to being able to report about those when I get back. I did just finish putting together some gifts to hand out to people. If anybody happens to see us in the parks while we're there, please feel free to introduce yourself, and I will have a gift to give you as well. And so I look forward to talking to people in person and sort of getting out from behind the keyboard, which is, you know, how the interactions normally take place. So looking forward to that and looking forward to kind of experiencing some new things during our trip. As I mentioned in the intro, we're going to talk about doing Disney World with little ones. And this is something that I feel very passionate about, partially because I did this a lot when my son was little, and he was a difficult little one, as I have mentioned before in previous podcast episodes, and so he forced me to get creative, and so I have lots of information to share with you about that today. Before I dive into that, I did want to take a chance to remind you that I appreciate iTunes ratings and reviews, which you can do if you're on your phone or computer. You can open the iTunes app, or you can go to wdwprepschool.com/iTunes, and it'll take you right there. The 5-star review of the day is left by somebody whose name, it says, "Nicknames are not for adults," which cracked me up. And the subject of this review is fantastic. And it says, "As a former Disney Cruise Line cast member, I find WDW Prep to Go refreshing. Shannon's very informed and personable. Her demeanor is inviting. And just like any good teacher, you receive great information without being bored. More importantly, Shannon's presentation style carefully integrates Disney World facts and figures with her own opinions and experiences. Unlike some podcasts that are loaded with one-sided, heavy-handed opinions. Shannon never hits you over the head with what she thinks you should think. Listening to her podcast is like having a conversation with a friend. Thanks, Shannon. Keep up the good work. And I so appreciate this this review. I really do work hard at exactly what this person just said. So I got an email this week that said, I decided to email you about my overwhelming anxiety about my trip, mostly because you seem the most approachable. So I really like that. That is sort of the feeling that people get. One of the hardest parts about running the site and the podcast and everything is that I will be talking to people for months while they plan their trip. And then they go on their trip and come back and they no longer have a need to interact with me because they're not going on a Disney World trip anymore. And so you spend months sort of getting to know people and then they're gone. And so that's sort of the hard part. But I really appreciate that review and appreciate anybody who takes the time to leave a review. So please do that if you can. Let's get into today's topic. And don't forget that I always have a quick tip of the day at the very end. So stay tuned for that. So today's topic is about little ones, doing Disney World with little ones. And we should start by defining what a little one is. Some people get frustrated that I don't define things by age. And one of the reasons I don't define things by age is because it just varies so much. So, you know, my kids, for instance, were pretty scared of things for much longer than other kids were. And so I would have been more likely to follow little one advice for them much longer than somebody else. It also might vary, you know, what your child's height is, their fears of the dark or of monsters, or their willingness or necessity to take naps. And, you know, mine took naps until they were 6 years old, which is much older than some kids who outgrow them at 2 or 3 years old. So I'm leaving little one a little bit gray and allowing you to define it for yourself. But in general, let's just say that little ones are kids who have not started school yet, who probably still need a midday break, and who are usually not quite tall enough for a lot of the rides. So we'll just leave it at that. And then you can kind of decide if this advice applies to you. If you have a brave kid who's tall enough to ride things, then feel free to ignore it and to focus more on advice that's targeted for bigger kids. But for now, we will just assume that that's what a little one is. And when people are asking me about if they should take their little ones on trips, I say, if you're going to go multiple times, then going at different stages is fun because every experience is different. As they get older, they get into different things. And so it's sort of fun. But if you're going to go only once, then I would wait until your child is closer to 7 or 8 years old because they can really do everything then. They are big enough for the big rides, not quite too big to make fun of the little kid things. So I would suggest 7 or 8 years old if you're going to go once. And we're going to dive into the 6 steps to plan a trip with little ones. But one of the things that people often want to know is how to prepare their kids for a trip. And I say, don't tell little ones too far in advance because, you know, 6 or 9 months is like an eternity. It's hard enough for adults, let alone kids, to do. And so don't tell them too far in advance, but I say do prepare them in advance. So when my son was little, I didn't tell him more than a couple weeks in advance, but we did talk a lot about Disney World. So we watched videos on YouTube. We had the Burn Bombs for Kids book, which I highly recommend because it has pictures, even if they can't read. It has great pictures and it has ratings for kids, like if it's scary or dark or, you know, whatever. And I'll list all the stuff in the show notes, of course, but Burn Bombs is spelled B-I-R-N-B-A-U-M. And you can pick that up on Amazon if you would like. There is also a channel on Destination America is the name of the channel. And they have had several Disney World specials on recently. And so that's fun to watch. So even if you're not telling them that you're going on a trip, it's fun to at least acquaint them with the general things about your trip and then let them know later on. So that is that. And one last thing before we dive into the steps is that I do recommend for people with little, actually for most people, but I think with little ones, I recommend a pattern of getting up early to go to the parks, going through just after lunch, taking an afternoon break for a few hours, and then going back in the evening. I think that afternoon break is key to keeping them from being worn down and having meltdowns. And from, you know, you have to really treat your trip like a marathon and it's not a sprint. So it really kind of helps pace your trip and keep them in good spirits and still having fun. So having said all of that, Let's dive into the 6-step planning process that I always use for every trip, and I'm going to use them to apply to a trip with little ones. Step one is always you have to choose when to go. And if you have little ones, then you are not bound by a school schedule. And so your opportunities are a little bit more wide open. And I would recommend looking at going after the time change, which is after Halloween. And it changes back actually today when this podcast goes live as a time change day, time change weekend. And so after Halloween through spring break, through mid-March is when the time is changed a little bit. And so Disney World nighttime entertainment will often be offered earlier, like at the Fantasmic show, for instance, will change to be 6:30 or 7 as opposed to 8 or 9, which is what it is in the summertime or during really busy times. The fireworks at Magic Kingdom will continue to be at 9 p.m. So they don't go like much, much earlier, but 9 p.m. is easier than 10 p.m. And so if you go after the time change, little ones are often able to stay up and without much problem and see those shows, as opposed to like in the middle of the summer, if you have to stay up really late, it can be hard for little ones that do go to bed a little bit earlier. And another consideration is that sometimes there are offers for families with little ones. So in 2014, there was an offer for January and February, and it was geared towards family with little ones to save money on packages. And it seemed to work out the best for families that stayed in value resorts. There are other deals, like there was the play, stay, and dine deal, which was kind of similar. But so my point is that the packages that focus on little ones are not necessarily the only thing you should look for if you have a little one, but sometimes it's an option. And they do focus on kids under 10. That's how Disney defines little ones, is kids under 10. So, you know, that was offered in January and February. So that sort of falls into my same time period of after Halloween, but before mid-March, avoiding the holidays in there. So that's kind of my recommendation. But of course, you can make any time of year work. It just kind of depends on your interests and when you're available. Step two is where to stay. And I'm going to assume that you're staying on site, because off site, there are just too many options to go through. And frankly, I don't know a lot about them. So when you're looking at staying on site, there are value, moderate, and deluxes. And I say for families with little ones to avoid moderates. They are lovely resorts, but they are more lovely for families with older kids or adults, because they are beautifully themed, but not particularly fun for kids. So let's just avoid the moderates and let's focus on value resorts and deluxe resorts. Now, in the value resort category, I recommend Pop Century if you're going for the cheapest on-site option, but the one that makes the most sense, because Pop Century has its own buses. So that's a good budget option. The other one in this value category is Art of Animation, which is mostly suites and some standard rooms. And the Art of Animation is a beautiful, really colorful new resort. And the suites are great because they have 3 beds, 2 bathrooms, a kitchenette. And so it's really great to be able to spread out. And if you want to close the door and have your kids sleep while you watch TV, have a glass of wine, whatever it is that you want to do, it can really be nice to have a separation of areas. The pricing on that is more like a moderate resort. So it's not like it's cheap to stay there, but it is a lot more space and beds, and really, really, really great theming. The 4 sections of Art of Animation are Cars, Lion King, Little Nemo, Finding Nemo, not Little Mermaid. I combined Nemo and Little Mermaid. Let me start over. Cars, Lion King, Finding Nemo, and Little Mermaid. The Little Mermaid section is the standard rooms that are just like a normal hotel room. The other 3 areas are suites, and they are amazing. If you do watch the Destination America channel, the resorts show, the new one that they just came out with for 2014, has a huge part of it about Art of Animation. So it's a good show to watch if you're curious about that resort. So that's one I recommend. And then in the deluxe category, I really like the Polynesian, which is a Magic Kingdom area resort. And it's fun to be on the monorail, and you can get easily to the Epcot monorail and the Magic Kingdom monorail. You can see the fireworks at Magic Kingdom from there. There's a beach, and it's just a great spot to be. My only side note is it's under a lot of construction. So for 2014, 2015, it's going to be kind of a mess as they build on a whole new section of the Polynesian. Two other ones in this category, the Contemporary is also a Magic Kingdom area resort, and it has the monorail going right through the middle of it. It also is featured in that Destination America show that I mentioned. And it's not, the Contemporary isn't particularly fun, I wouldn't say, but it is fun to have the monorail going through the building. Chef Mickey's is in the same building, and you can walk to Magic Kingdom if you want to. If you don't want to take the monorail, you can actually walk. So there's good things about it that would appeal to families with little ones. It's not the theming itself. It's not particularly fun in itself, but still a good option. And one last recommendation would be Animal Kingdom Lodge. Animal Kingdom Lodge is great for animal lovers because you can have a view of the animals there right off your balcony, and that would appeal to people that are really into the animals. And the only problem with that is that it is pretty remote, so it doesn't have easy access like to watch the fireworks or anything, but it is a beautiful resort that has definite perks if you're into animals. All right, so that's where to stay. Step three is making your daily plan, and this is where you pick where you're going to be every day. And so generally that means picking which parks you're going to visit. And so when you have little ones, I would recommend focusing on Magic Kingdom and maybe even skipping Epcot, which is sort of painful for me to say. Our family's favorite park is Epcot, so it's hard for me to say that. But for little ones, maybe skipping Epcot makes sense. Hollywood Studios is great if you're into shows. Animal Kingdom's great if you're into animals. So for instance, let's say you have 3 days, and I would recommend that you use two of those for Magic Kingdom and then pick Hollywood Studios or Animal Kingdom for your third. If you have 4 days, I say 2 days at Magic Kingdom, 1 at Hollywood Studios, 1 at Animal Kingdom. 5 days, I mean 2 days at Magic Kingdom and 1 at the other three parks. And if you go beyond that, then I recommend taking a break day in the middle. After, let's say, 3 days in the park, I recommend having a break day just to pace yourself because it is a lot of walking. So that's with regard to your daily plan. Now, step four is about picking your dining. And I like picking dining after making a daily plan because I want the dining to be based on where you're going to be. I don't want you to be going all over the place, sitting on buses, trying to get to a restaurant. And so one option in the dining category that might appeal to kids is character dining. And this can be a great way to introduce kids to characters, you know, if they don't want to wait in line and feel like they're on the spot posing with characters or having to interact with them. It can be great to sort of be eating a meal and having the characters around them. It can just be a gentler introduction. I have seen kids scream, you know, when they were surprised by a character coming up behind them. So, you know, be sensitive to that if your child has anxieties about it. But I do think character meals can be a great way to do that. For instance, and two of them that I can recommend for the classic characters like Mickey and Minnie are Chef Mickey's, which is in the Contemporary, and Tusker House, which is at the Animal Kingdom. And it's basically the classic characters, but dressed in their safari gear. And they're both buffets. And when I had a little one, I really liked having buffets because although it was more difficult because we had to get up and down to get plates, it was also more noisy and there was a lot more movement. So I felt like any noise that we were causing with a little one sort of blended in because there was always a lot going on. Another restaurant that might appeal is the T-Rex Cafe, which is located in Downtown Disney, which is dinosaur themed, obviously. And when it comes to try and decide on your dining, I wouldn't overdo it too much on the table service meals, especially if your little ones cannot sit still for very long. And my son was definitely like that when he was little, so much so that we had a restaurant bag that we kept in our car. And the things that were in the restaurant bag were things that we only brought out at restaurants. So he at least had that to look forward to. So there were certain like activity books or games or whatever that he only got to play at restaurants. So that's something that you could do on your Disney trip if you do have some restaurant reservations and you're not sure if your little one's going to want to sit through it. You have to count on 60 to 90 minutes for a table service meal. It can take a little while to get checked in. If you're going to a character meal, it can take a little while for the characters to come around and to get their autograph or take their picture or whatever. So I just wouldn't suggest doing very many of these with little ones. My sister-in-law has sort of a different viewpoint on this in that she views them as a chance to sit down and in the air conditioning and rest. But we just didn't find it very restful when we had little kids. So this was something that we you know, we would do a maximum of one of these per day. So that is step four. Step five is about park touring. And I did posts on every park for FastPass Plus to kind of show how to use FastPass Plus and my suggested touring plans. And in all those, I have link, I have touring plans for little ones. And so that can be a good reference for you if you're planning a trip like that. And I'll link to it in the show notes. And another consideration when you're thinking about park touring is to possibly let your kids lead a little bit. And I think with FastPass Plus, this is actually getting harder because it's a lot less spontaneous than it used to be. But little kids get obsessive about things. And so when, like, for instance, Buzz Lightyear is the example I often use. People will ride Buzz Lightyear Space Ranger spin at Magic Kingdom and just want to do it over and over and over again. And I let my son do that. And I don't have any regrets about it because now he's not into that at all. And he's much more likely to want to ride a thriller ride over and over again. And so, you know, that's something, if you have the flexibility to do that, I recommend doing that. There is a height requirement on some rides, and 40 inches is sort of the height requirement where that a lot of rides fall into. So if your kid's under 40 inches, then those will be ones to skip. Or you can use Rider Switch, which will allow parents to take turns riding it while another one stays with the kid. I do have a link to an article about that on the site, including some suggestions for what to do nearby. Like if one parent is riding, then what do you do with the kid while that parent's riding? I have some ideas for how that can work. And so that is an option as well, even if your kid is not at that 40-inch mark. There are some things that are dark and scary. Even if your child is tall enough to do it, they probably shouldn't. And one of those examples is it's tough to be a bug show at Animal Kingdom. It is fun for older kids and adults, but every single time I'm there, the families leave with screaming kids. It is absolutely terrifying to little kids. I have a whole post on things that could be dark or scary for little ones that I will also link in the show notes. And that's something to consider even if they are tall enough. I do recommend giving kids who are scared of the dark a little flashlight that could be kept on a key ring so they sort of feel in control if they get scared of the dark. You may even, if they're sensitive to sounds, want to get them like headphones that are good for filtering out sound. We actually got ours from a store that sold hunting supplies. We got kids' headphones to protect from the sounds because our kids were both really sensitive to fireworks when they were little. And so that was a good option for us. And finally, in this park touring category is about whether or not you should use a stroller. My general advice on this is if at home you use a stroller still with your little one, I think you should take it because you're going to want it through the long walks at the airport or at your resort or whatever. If your child is old enough that they are past the stroller stage, then I might suggest renting one in the parks because within the parks, it's going to be a lot of walking. And these are these kids, for instance, would be okay walking at the resort, walking at the airport, but walking all day in a park and walking 50 miles in a week is probably too much for them. And, you know, it's a lot for adults, let alone little ones. So I might suggest renting a stroller for that. But if you use one at home regularly, I say bring it or have one delivered to your resort. All right, the final step, step six, is to add extra magic. And my favorite way to add extra magic, especially with little ones, is with Tinkerbell gifts. And the concept of this is much like Santa Claus, where you have gifts every morning. And I like to have little kids decorate like a gift bag, like while you're waiting at the airport or something. And then the gift bag has stuff left in it every day if they follow a few very basic rules. One of them is to take an afternoon break. This is what I used to do. I would say you have to take an afternoon break. You need to have fun and you need to go to the bathroom every time. If somebody in the group goes to the bathroom, everybody in the group goes to the bathroom. And so, you know, just three or four rules to follow. And then if they followed those, then Tinkerbell would leave something in the gift bag every morning, usually related to that day, like glow sticks or something fun, like for the swimming pool or whatever. So that is one idea. Another idea in this extra magic category might be extra magic for the adults. So I highly recommend date nights. We took advantage of childcare being available on trips when our kids were little because we wanted to be able to kind of take a break and we needed it because it's really hard to be with an intense kid or two for a whole week. And so we would use a nanny that was on site or the childcare. And so I have ideas in another post about date night ideas for what to do and for how to get the kids taken care of while you're gone. And I will link to that as part of the show notes for this episode. So anyway, I hope that that sort of gives you some ideas as you kind of plan a trip with little ones. I do have a quick tip of the day before we wrap it up today. And it is related to having little ones. And so my quick tip of the day is this. If you are flying, make sure you pay for reserved seats or an early boarding pass, especially if you have little kids. Now, I fly Southwest Airlines on most of my trips, and they have boarding group A, B, C, and every single time there are families boarding at the end, and they are shocked that they are not going to find seats together. I pay for early boarding, which is, it's called early bird boarding, and it's $5 per person per leg, per like, so for a round trip, it would be 10 bucks. And that automatically checks me in and gets my boarding position. And my son's 12, so he's not little, but I still would like to sit with him. And so I always pay that to make sure that we get to sit together. And we usually end up either in the middle or the end of group A. A lot of people think that when Southwest, as long as they're online 24 hours in advance, that they can get group A. And it kind of depends, because a lot of us that have taken advantage of early bird boarding get those A spots. And so you'll be later in the line if you are doing it manually. And on other airlines that make you pay extra for seats, I say pay for the seats, and at least for one adult and one kid, you know, if you don't want to do it for your whole group, but you want to make sure that those things are secure, because you might assume that you'll be put together and you might be wrong. So I think that is going to pretty much wrap up this episode of WDW Prep to Go. For more information, including all the links and everything I've mentioned in this episode, you can visit wdwprepschool.com/episode29. That is the number 29. Until next time, I'll see you on the site.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.